There is a very deep-seated commitment to do as much as we possibly can this year.
Building on anti-COVID cooperation to counter Beijing. It's Friday, February 11th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, COVID mental health fallout in Australia, a Beijing Olympics update, an international warning on Ukraine, improving robot movie making, and climate change's threat to your morning brew. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken meets with the foreign ministers of the Quad countries today. That includes Australia, India, and Japan. Australian Foreign Affairs Minister Maurice Payne, who will host the meeting, says the gathering sends a message to China that security in the region remains a priority for the United States. The ministers are also expected to focus on regional coronavirus vaccine distribution. Blinken says U.S.-Australian cooperation against COVID-19 has been effective.
Between Australia and the United States. I think it's safe to say that we have been leaders and leaders together in trying to deal with COVID and also in trying to build back better so that we have an even stronger, more effective global health security system after we get through this. But of course, we're not through it yet. And the work that we're doing together, whether it comes to the production of vaccines, the distribution of vaccines, everything that goes into them, trying to get shots into arms, working on therapeutics, making sure that we're supporting healthcare workers who are on the front lines of this. All of that is vitally important, and you know, we know and we continue to experience that the cliche that no one is safe until everyone is safe is profoundly true. And I know that between our governments, and this is something I'll be spending some time on while I'm here, there is a very deep-seated commitment to do as much as we possibly can this year to really once and for all get ahead of this pandemic.
Blinken also weighed in on the escalating tensions on the Russia-Ukraine border, where Russia has amassed more than 100,000 troops engaged in military maneuvers.
What we're committed to in the case of Ukraine is doing everything we can to defend Ukraine's territorial integrity, its sovereignty, its independence, which unfortunately is being challenged right now by Russia. If Russia chooses to renew its aggression against Ukraine, we've made clear, not just us, but countries throughout Europe and even beyond, that there'll be massive consequences. So my hope is that Russia will be deterred by the actions that we've taken to build, to bring together many, many countries that stand against renewed aggression by Russia and Ukraine.
The Quad meetings come just 1 week after Russian President Vladimir Putin held his first face-to-face meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping in more than a year. Blinken is expected to discuss threats presented by the growing partnership between China and Russia. Chinese Commerce Ministry spokesman Gao Feng said Thursday that partnership is deepening its economic cooperation.
下一步，中方将与俄方共同努力。
In the following step, China and Russia will work together to make full efforts in implementing the important consensus and outcome made at the meeting between the two heads of state. The two will join hands in striving to turn the roadmap into practice for pushing high-quality China-Russia trade development in goods and services and entrench investment cooperation and green approach, so as to advance the wide-ranging cooperation in economy and trade, energy, agriculture, science and technology, aviation and space, connectivity and finance, and make steady progress toward the $200 billion U.S. dollars trade target set by the two heads of state.
Although Russia and China do not share a formal alliance, both countries have drawn closer in recent years as they work to counter U.S. influence. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also, of course, on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Anti-China sentiment erupts in South Korea ahead of vote. Fearing junta, Myanmar parents disown dissident children. China suspected of cyber attacks targeting U.S. organizations. China's U.N. envoy says choice of Uyghur torchbearer not meant to deflect Western criticism. Australia reopening to tourists as COVID-19 border closures set to end. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. A new study says 1 in 10 Australian healthcare workers has had thoughts of suicide or self-harm during the pandemic. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The authors of the Australian Frontline Health Workers Survey believe it's the world's largest study of suicidal thoughts among healthcare workers. It canvassed the opinions of 8,000 staff in a range of positions and professions, including support staff, cleaners, doctors and nurses. The survey finds 10% of respondents have had thoughts of self-harm or suicide during the pandemic, but fewer than half had sought help from a mental health professional. Even before the emergence of COVID-19, Australian health workers had higher rates of suicide than those in other occupations. The study's authors said that emotional exhaustion and burnout were common among many respondents. What is unclear is the impact stress, which could cause more medical errors, has had on the quality of patient care. Georgina Lonergan, a nuclear medicine technologist in Victoria State, told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that her job was extremely stressful.
There's an undercurrent of anxiety, I think, for everyone working in healthcare. I've definitely had an undercurrent of anxiety increasing over the last couple of years. Some days you just really don't want to come. There's been a couple of days where I've been close to tears on the way in, just from anxiety and just being tired of it all.
The survey was published Wednesday in the Australian and New Zealand Journal of Psychiatry. Much of Australia continues to battle a wave of Omicron variant infections. Government data has shown that more than 3,500 people are in the hospital with the virus. Since the pandemic began, Australia has detected 2.4 million coronavirus cases. 4,366 people have died, according to the health department. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
South Korea said on Thursday patients with mild coronavirus symptoms will have to treat themselves. This new strategy aims to free up medical resources for more serious cases as the Omicron variant continues to spread. The daily count of cases in the country has surged more than twofold in less than a week. Korean Disease Control and Prevention Agency senior official Lim Suk-young.
As Omicron has become the dominant variant and the number of confirmed cases has rapidly increased, proper protection for high-risk groups is the most important thing. Consider this. We are changing the overall virus prevention system.
South Korea has largely been a COVID-19 mitigation success story thanks to aggressive testing and tracing, social distancing and mask wearing. But the government this month started to shift its strategy towards self-monitoring, diagnosis and at-home treatment. Beginning Thursday, February 10th, authorities will only provide care to COVID-19 patients age 60 and older or with underlying conditions, while others monitor themselves and seek medical help from designated clinics if their conditions worsen. Medical kits, including an oxygen saturation measurement device, a thermometer, and a fever remedy, were previously available to all patients who treat themselves at home. They will now be distributed only to priority groups. Dozens of Indian students protested across the country on Thursday against a hijab ban imposed by the southern state of Karnataka. In New Delhi, police detained some students while women wearing burqas held a protest in eastern Kolkata city with Indian national flags and posters bearing slogans like, "Hijab is our right." The government of Karnataka, where 12% of the population is Muslim and which is ruled by Prime Minister Narendra Modi's BJP party, has said in an order that students should follow dress codes set by schools. Local media reported last week that several schools in Karnataka had denied entry to Muslim girls wearing the hijab, citing an education ministry order, prompting protests from parents and students. Karnataka Education Minister B.C. Nagesh.
But one thing, my common sense is that when they have not given interim relief, then the notification of the act and rule prevails. According to the act and rule, every institution has a right to prescribe the uniform, and many schools have prescribed the uniform, and that the school should run according to that.
Hindu students mounted counter-protests, flocking to schools in recent days in support of the ban, forcing the Karnataka state government to shut down schools and colleges for 3 days to ease tensions between the two communities. Still ahead on VOA Asia, border blockade shuts down Ford production. Now in Asia, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi voiced optimism that his Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party will win in Uttar Pradesh and in four other states that choose new governments in coming weeks. But political analysts say the elections will be an uphill battle for the BJP. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. So happy you've decided to join us here on VOA Asia. A blockade by protesters of the bridge between Canada and the U.S. city of Detroit, Michigan, forced a shutdown of a Ford Motor plant Wednesday. The protesters are demanding an end to Canada's COVID-19 restrictions, and the disruption of cross-border traffic is beginning to have broader implications for the North American auto industry. Canada-bound traffic was halted at the Ambassador Bridge between Detroit and Windsor, Ontario, while U.S.-bound traffic was still moving. Ford says auto parts shortages forced it to shut down its engine plant in Windsor and to run an assembly plant in Oakville, Ontario, on a reduced schedule. The blockade also disrupted operations at a General Motors factory near Lansing, Michigan. At the Beijing Olympics heading into competition today, Germany now leading the medals table with 6 gold medals and 3 silver. Norway still in second place in the official table ranked by gold medals. They have 5 along with 3 silver and 4 bronze. And Austria takes third place with 4 golds, 5 silvers and 4 bronze. Host China has moved to 7th place with 3 gold and 3 silver medals, and the United States has moved up to 4th place with 4 gold medals, 5 silver medals, and 1 bronze. VOA's Chris Cascajo has the latest wrap-up of the 2022 Winter Olympic Games in Beijing.
Nathan Chen delivered a rousing performance of his Rocketman free skate, landing 5 quadruple jumps. The 22-year-old's win makes him the 7th U.S. men's skater to win the top prize. He cited 9-time U.S. champion and 2-time Olympic medalist Michelle Kwan when asked if taking home gold could inspire other Asian Americans.
Having had a person like Michelle Kwan growing up certainly was very inspirational for me. And you know, to see another Chinese American do such amazing, amazing things in the same sort of passion field that I had so much passion for. As much as I can, you know, I hope that, you know, that still rings true for other younger athletes.
Japan's Yuma Kageyama and Shoma Uno won silver and bronze, respectively. Figure skating's governing body has declined to address reports that the 15-year-old who helped the Russians win gold in the team event at the Beijing Olympics previously tested positive for doping. Russian media say Kamila Valieva tested positive for a banned heart medication before the Beijing Games. In snowboarding, American Chloe Kim defended her 2018 gold medal in the women's halfpipe with another win Thursday. Kim needed only the first of her 3 runs to set a score no other competitor could match. The U.S. men's hockey team, mostly filled with college players, defeated China 8-0 on Thursday night in the opening game of their Olympics tournament. There are reportedly only 6 local athletes on China's 25-member team, with most of them coming from Canada and the U.S. Thursday's other gold medal winners, the U.S. in mixed team aerials freestyle skiing, Austria in men's combined alpine skiing and men's snowboard cross, Germany in the team luge relay, the Netherlands in women's 5,000-meter speed skating, and Norway in women's classic 10-kilometer cross-country skiing. Chris Cascajo, VOA News, Washington.
Follow all of the latest Olympics news with us at voanews.com. And of course, you can read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. now in Asia. Indonesia has signed a deal with France to buy 6 warplanes as part of an anticipated total order of 42. Paris is bolstering its military ties in the Asia Pacific. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. An international humanitarian official warns a war in Ukraine would be cataclysmic, potentially engulfing neighboring countries and turning into a regional conflict. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Jan Egeland, just spent a week along the government side of the front line that separates Ukrainian armed forces from the Russian-backed rebel-held regions of eastern Ukraine. He went there to gauge people's views on a possible Russian invasion of Ukraine. He says people overwhelmingly agree it would be utterly insane to launch another cataclysmic war. He says they told him it would be senseless beyond belief.
And they said, listen, this is completely surreal for us. They feel that they are hostage now to some kind of a geopolitical chess game that is engulfing them. None of the people who make the decisions will suffer. They will suffer, and they have no part of it.
Ukraine has been involved in a simmering war for the past 8 years. In 2014, Russia invaded and illegally annexed the Crimean Peninsula. Soon after, Russian-backed separatists took up arms in the Donbas region. About 2 million people live along the 20-kilometer contact line that separates government and separatist forces. Egeland says most of the young people have left the area, leaving an aging population of poor pensioners behind. He says it is they who will be the victims if war breaks out.
You cannot have a war among hundreds of thousands of freezing, miserable pensioners on both sides. It is vulnerable communities with babushkas that I met in their 80s who really would be taking in the first of the fighting.
Egeland warns war would displace around 2 million people just along the contact line. He says a war also would trigger a massive refugee exodus, with most people fleeing for safety to Russia and Poland. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia. A COVID lockdown in a Chinese city of 3.5 million near the Vietnam border has sent global aluminum prices soaring to a 14-year high. Bays is a hub for aluminum mining and production. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia. A Texas company is helping make robot-led movie making even more realistic. Deanna Mitchell has the story from Austin, Texas.
So I've got this tablet, and I've got this wand. I use the trigger on the wand. When I squeeze that, it's like I'm virtually grabbing the camera.
Motion control robotics have been used in filmmaking for decades, but have a bad reputation as being cumbersome to use, experts say.
So our mission has been to change that and to make it as simple and intuitive as possible.
Sisu, a Texas robotics company, makes a cinema robot.
The director can say, I want the camera here, and then I want it over here. And so we've even put the controller in the hand of the director and said, pull this trigger and show me what you mean. And they'll just pull the trigger and just move their hand, and the camera just follows the movement of their hand.
The Sisu cinema robot's arm is like robotic arms used in automobile manufacturing, which requires precision. The secret sauce, the firm says, is a combination of sensors and accelerometers that make the camera easier and faster to manipulate. That's important when working on action films, where the same shot needs to be filmed multiple times.
You'll see it in the action movies too, where somebody busts through a wall. So they break through the wall first, doing this shot, then they have somebody jump through the wall, doing that same shot, and then they put them over top of each other, and it looks like the person just broke through the wall.
Cinema robotics expert Jeff Linnell, whose former company used motion control robots for the science fiction thriller Gravity, says Sisu's technology is making the experience even easier.
Person on the street that can play a video game can make that robot do something in half a day or a day, which is great. So They've definitely democratized it, and these things are becoming much more usable.
More realistic looking filmmaking thanks to robotic help. Dina Mitchell for VOA News, Austin, Texas.
Millions of people around the world enjoy drinking coffee, but the daily caffeine fix could be under threat because climate change is killing coffee plants. As Henry Ridgewell reports, scientists in London are working with farmers in Africa to find a solution.
Outside the vast glass houses at London's Kew Botanic Gardens, the temperature is below freezing. Inside, the heat and humidity replicate a tropical jungle. Aaron Davis leads Kew's research into coffee.
This is Arabica coffee, our preferred coffee, the one we drink in high streets and at home. It has a superior taste. And this coffee provides us with about 60% of the coffee that we drink globally. The other species over here is Robusta coffee. So this has a slightly larger leaf. This coffee provides us with the other 40% of the world's coffee supply.
The cultivation of Arabica and Robusta coffee beans supports millions of livelihoods across Africa, South America and Asia. But they're under threat because of climate change.
In some cases, yields are dramatically reduced because of increased temperatures or reduced rainfall. But in some cases, as we've seen in Ethiopia, you might get a complete harvest failure and death of the trees.
The solution could be growing deep in the forests of West Africa. There are around 130 species of coffee plant, but not all taste good. In Sierra Leone, Davis and his team identified one candidate growing in the wild, Stenophylla.
And this is extremely heat tolerant and is an interesting species because it matches Arabica in terms of its superb taste.
A further two coffee species also show promise for commercial cultivation in a changing climate, Liberica and Eugeniades.
That has low yields and very small beans, but it has an amazing taste.
Some believe the taste is far superior. At the 2021 World Barista Championships in Milan, Australia's Hugh Kelly won third prize with his Eugeniades espresso.
Today you'll taste pink guava, fresh pineapple, and passion fruit.
Researchers hope Kelly's success could be the breakthrough moment for these relatively unknown beans. The team at Kew Botanic Gardens is working with farmers in Africa on cultivating the new coffees commercially. Catherine Kiwuka oversees the projects in Uganda.
What requirements do they need? How do we boost its productivity? Instead of it being dominated by only two species, we have the opportunity to tap into the value of other coffee species.
It's hoped that substantial volumes of Liberica coffee will be exported from Uganda to Europe this year. Researchers hope it will provide a sustainable income for farmers and an exciting new taste for coffee drinkers. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
South Korea's celebrity power couple Hyun Bin and Sun Ye Jin will get married in March, the couple announced on Thursday. The two stars played a North Korean military officer and South Korean businesswoman couple who accidentally met in the border area in the 2019 TV series Crash Landing on You, which was also released on Netflix and gained global fans. The couple has been dating since early 2020. I found someone to spend the rest of my life with. Yes, it's him, Sun said on her Instagram. Hyun Bin's agency Vast Entertainment also posted his handwritten announcement letter on Instagram. Sun's agency MS Team Entertainment said the couple planned to hold a wedding ceremony at an undisclosed place in Seoul with only their parents and friends invited due to COVID-19. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. Enjoy your day.